Over 50,000 Australians were based at Butterworth, which is in Malaysia. Matthew Radcliffe is the author of a book that's coming up called Kampong Australia, which documents the experience of the Australian Air Force personnel at Butterworth Base in Malaysia from 1955 to 1988. Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning, mate. How are you?
Good. Matthew, firstly, why is it called Butterworth?
Butterworth was the town. There's a small town called Butterworth on the mainland. It's in northern Malaya. And that's where they made the base.
So what were the origins of the base? Why was it set up?
That's a good question. I suppose the short version for a Monday morning is that it was a big mistake. In late 1954 and early 1955, the Menzies government was absolutely certain that Indochina would eventually fall to the communists, and they decided that this would be the place to make the stand against a surging communist army. And so they really wanted to avoid a repeat of that Japanese march south down the peninsula. And so they decided to get together with the British and the New Zealanders and start building these bases on the Malay Peninsula ready for this sort of eventuality. As we sort of now know, they completely misjudged the American resolve in South Vietnam, and it turns out that making this base was, you know, putting them way too far behind that, you know, that hot edge of the Cold War in Southeast Asia, and they really didn't do too much. So what we have left for somebody like me is this big Australian community in northern Malaya that eventually lasted for about 33 years.
Matthew, it's interesting that that base went for such a long time, because you would think, given that it went to 1988, the threat wasn't particularly there later.
I think what ended up happening is that the politics of the base ended up taking over, and it just managed to sort of be there. And so the momentum of the base just kept it there to 1988. But it is quite interesting, yeah.
When you take a look at that, because something like there were 50,000 Australians were based there, which is a lot of people, and obviously there was recognition that it was still important to Australia and for want of a better word, for the defences of Australia.
To some extent, it was. And the 50,000 people is interesting. I think the thing you have to remember there as well is that it wasn't just the people who rotated the base, the servicemen and their families, but it was also the people who visited them, which you could nearly add another 50,000 to that. I mean, people took the opportunity to say, you know, here's a little community in Asia, especially in the 60s where people didn't travel as much.
Hmm.
And they took the opportunity to go and visit their family or their friends or their cousin or their aunt. So lots of people visited Penang as part of this sort of Australian little outpost up there.
I got a text here saying my brother was a pilot in the Air Force and did three tours of 2 years each in Butterworth. It was a very large base with its own school and radio, etc. And I believe he enjoyed his time there. So from the experience that you had talking to people, was it something that they enjoyed doing?
Oh, without question. I mean, overwhelmingly. If you were in the Air Force between 1955 and 1988, you wanted to go there. And people saw this as a really great opportunity. Yeah.
Vicky, good morning.
I was only a kid and my dad was posted to Butterworth and we had great family memories. I think I was six. It was about 1965. And he was a wing commander in the Air Force then. And they flew, I think they were still flying Sabres and then they got the Mirages. But my sister was 11 years older than me, and she was always racing off with the young fighter pilots, and I used to have to play wingman for her and go and suss out everyone at the pool.
So it was just, was it just I'm not going to say like a suburb, but it was just because there were so many Australians around, it was, you might as well have been in Australia?
Yeah, well, you lived on the base, and so they were all Australians.
Yeah.
Except for the people who helped in the house, the domestic staff who helped everyone in the house, and they were Malay.
Did you spend much time with locals outside the base or most of the time spent on the base?
On the base.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, aside from, as I had a nanny who was, Kimmy was her name, and I spoke better Malay and Chinese as a young kid than I did English because I was exposed to her, and now I don't have a word of it.
How long were you there for, Vicky?
3 years.
Okay, and fond memories?
Yeah, yeah, mainly through my sister, you know, and all her exploits and whatever. And holding her to ransom, telling the fighter pilots that her and her girlfriend Alison were at home putting their makeup on. So I had to go down to see if Huck the Nuck, who was the gun pilot, was down at the pool so they could go down to the pool and parade around.
Thank you, Vicky. It sounds like a suburb, Matthew.
Yeah, there was probably more to the point that there was a couple of suburbs. I mean, there was a big community on Penang Island itself, which was actually off the mainland. So the base was on the mainland, and Penang Island is just off it. So people had to get the ferry across to work and back. But there was a community at Butterworth as well. So there's probably a few.
And swimming pool, and it was sort of pretty well set up.
Yeah, there's a couple of focal points, as most communities have, but being a big expat community, the swimming pool up in the balmy weather up there was definitely one of them. The RAP school on Penang Island was another big focal point for the community, and of course the base itself with all the functions. There was also lots of sporting clubs up there. They had a golf club at the base, and they also had a bowls club, which is interesting. One of the only Australian bowls clubs, lawn bowls clubs up in Northern Asia.
It was interesting just listening to Vicky saying that they had local housepeople or nannies and so forth. Was there a bit of a colonial attitude to it?
Yes, there was. I mean, you can imagine in 1955, the Australians actually moved into what was still a British colony. And that lasted, I think, probably up to about 1970. And then attitudes began to change. But it did have a bit of that colonial hangover in the first maybe decade and a half.
And what was the relationship like with the Malaysian government, with the Australian having a base there?
It's generally good. They were very, very supportive of the base through all of the political sort of negotiations, I suppose we should say, towards the 80s. The base was a really positive thing in that relationship.
Because Malaysia declared independence, what, in the late 50s?
1957.
Okay, so the base was already there. So that was there during the whole independence movement.
It was still under construction. So from 1955 until about 1958, it was still being made by Australians. So they laid the runway, built a lot of the hangars and stuff. But it happened at that time, yeah.
So they didn't necessarily see Australia as having anything to do with their independence. Australia was quite separate to the colony in that way.
Yeah, that's true. It does have there is a sort of a colonial factor in that part of the agreement for independence had this proviso that defence would still be a Commonwealth function.
Yep. And was it also seen for Malaysia as a positive thing to have an Australian airbase there, especially when they're just going through independence, that there was good to have a strong ally like Australia?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Malaysia didn't have their own air force. And so the Australians actually at Butterworth did a lot to help them develop one. In fact, the sabres that Vicky was talking about were eventually given to Malaya as a gift, and their pilots trained up on them. And so as they sort of developed their own capability, the Australians at Butterworth were key in helping them do that.
So, yeah, historically it's quite important for the relationship between us and Malaysia.
It is, and it tends to be forgotten. In fact, there's a small group of Australians still there. So there's about 130 Australian servicemen and their families still there. So it hasn't ended. I end in 1988 when the flying squadrons come back home. And the community goes from about 4,000 or 5,000 down to, you know, a couple of hundred. But it still is an important part of the relationship.
We've got heaps of people wanting to tell us about their experiences. Hello, Ray.
Mate, we were over there in 68. My dad was in the army and was posted over there. We were living in Malacca.
Oh, so the army were there as well?
Yeah.
And what do you remember about it, right?
Well, I was 5 at the time. I remember the lovely people. We had an armor called Eileen. And we had a gardener. We used to help catch the big beetles and the purple flowers. Remember the pools? And the fish and chip shop, this man used to come around in his little van and loved it when he came to our place. 20 cents a side, it was about $1.10, I think, Malay at that stage. So we'd get our serving of chips each, and he'd race off down the road.
God, they sound like such good... I mean, it's a beautiful climate, and it's and you're living in the tropics.
Yeah, absolutely. We used to sit lay down in the storm water during the rain.
How long were you there for, right?
3 years, I think.
Okay, and so was that a normal length of time?
Yes, yeah, that was a standard posting, I think, at that stage.
Okay, so Matthew, that was a normal length of time for a tour, in inverted commas?
Yeah, between 2 and 3 years, depending upon where the replacements were coming from.
So you're talking about the RAAF, Ray saying that the Army were there too?
Yeah, as part of the initial deployment, the Australians deployed a battalion and a few other Army elements up there as well. The battalion was originally at Penang until 1961, and then they moved down to Terendak at Malacca. And so they built their own purpose barracks down there, and they stayed there till 1971.
You were just saying how it's still important. I've got a text here from Mark that says, I'm a current member of the Australian Defence Force, and our unit is doing 2 tours of Butterworth this year for jungle warfare training. Looking forward to it, and thank you for the insight. So still doing tours there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Air Force still has major exercises up there. They still have a big Army rotation through there for different reasons, but it's still an important, Malaysia and Singapore are still very important defence allies for Australia.
I presume the base is a lot smaller now, if you take a look at the numbers of people, but still there in existence.
Yeah, the base is still there. It was taken over. In fact, it was taken over halfway through the Australian time up there. So when the British left in the early 1970s, the Malaysians actually took over the base and we became guests. So it was really called the RAF base at Butterworth until 1971, and then it was called Air Base Butterworth, and the Malaysians took it over. But it was much more of a cooperative relationship from then on.
Is it still as large?
Yeah, they still have a few squadrons flying through there. So yeah.
Len, good morning.
Yes, I went with my father, who was in the Air Force, and my mother and my older sister, and we lived in both Penang and on the base at Butterworth. And my brother was the first child born to an Australian serviceman in Malaya.
Okay.
And we had a wonderful time. I remember the swimming pool. I could swim the length of an Olympic pool when I was 5.
Yeah.
Because we spent so much time there. And we had an RMR called Mary, who was lovely. And my mother went back to visit about 30 years after. She actually found her, which were great memories. The one thing that did sour it a little bit for us, although at the time, there were newspaper articles saying that my brother had triple citizenship because it was still part of the British Empire then and he was Malaysian. And the Australian government passed a law that made him an Australian. They didn't tell my mother that she had to apply for that. So when he came home and it was no longer part of the British Empire and Malaysia had taken over from Malaya, and my mother never applied for my brother's citizenship, when he applied for a passport, they said, oh, no, you're not Australian.
So that's amazing. So born of a serviceman in Malaysia, but wasn't considered to be Australian because they didn't apply for a passport.
Yeah, and it's lucky my father had passed away because my mother went through hell trying to get support from the RSL and even applying to the minister, who I will never forget because she had... the Minister for Integration had the ability to declare that in this case he was an Australian citizen, and she declined to do that.
Well, so how did it finish up?
Well, he had to become naturalised.
Bizarre, Matthew.
Yeah, I actually was born at the RAF Base Hospital myself with my twin brother, and we had Malaysian birth certificates. So whenever we used to go up to the football training or to join a new football club, they'd say, "Where's your birth certificate?" And we'd roll up with these Malaysian birth certificates, and they'd just look at us with blank faces.
Did you?
What the hell is that?
But you didn't have the problem of not being Australian citizens.
No, I'd say they must have ironed that out by then.
Thank you, Len. Good morning, Peter.
Oh, yeah, I was in Butterworth. I was on the HMAS Swan, and there was a legendary footy match that was played there in 1980, HMAS Swan versus RAF Butterworth, and... I still bump into mates to talk about that match because I've been out for a long time, but still bump into mates to talk about that match because we had the old chief electrician. His name was Mal McFetridge, and in those days, it was a lot of pride was at stake if you played inter-service matches because you didn't often get to play a game of footy, especially in the Navy because we had sea all the time. But they had a beautiful football ground there, and it was a real, stop the bus kind of football match. It was really on the line. It wasn't dirty or anything. It was just good, tough, hard footy.
Yeah.
And our old chief electrician, who couldn't play footy for nuts, but he could drop kick. He couldn't do any other kick, but he could do a drop kick. At least marked it on the wing, and the final siren's gone, and we were 4 points down. And it was a sort of breathtaking kind of moment, because we had this... They turned it into an exhibition match, and they invited all the locals in from Penang.
Yeah.
So it was a fairly big crowd there, locals who'd never seen Australian rules football. And we had a big chubby fella in our team called Dory Evans. He was a sonar technician, and he had bright blonde, blonde hair and a big blonde bushy beard.
All right, Peter, he marked it on the wing.
He's marked it on the wing, yeah. And Dory Evans has gone to fly pass to take the hand pass, but the final siren gone, and the whole crowd's burst into laughter because they'd never seen a man with blonde hair and a blonde bushy beard.
Yeah.
So while all the crowd's laughing their heads off, Mal McFetch would just let go with his drop kick, and it was a strong wind, and then next thing you know, the wind's got a hold of it, and it was like, no one knew that Mal McFetridge ever had it in him to kick a football that far, but it went sailing through the air and everyone held their breath and right at the left, bang, hit the post.
And I bet Peter, like, the story started out, he was 30 metres out, then it became 40, 50, and it ended up being 80.
Yeah, well, it was a bit like that, but I was a ruck in that match, and, he was a long way out, and... still to this day, we're bumping up at people, and the first thing they ask is, have you ever caught up with Mal McFetridge? Wouldn't congratulate him for that kick. And if Mal's listening to the ABC right now, Mal, you're a legend.
Good on you. Thank you, Peter. Obviously, Matthew, I mean, when you hear about, like, football games, you hear about the pool, it was an important family situation. And were people encouraged to take their families?
Yes, they were, to some extent. At one stage, they were concerned that there were too many families going up there because they didn't have the accommodation for them. But I think in about 1965, there was a sort of survey done, and about 80% of servicemen who went to Butterworth were married. So it was a very big family environment. One of the reasons for that is that if you were in a long-term relationship, quite often when you got your posting to Butterworth, you got married so that you could take your long-term girlfriend or fiancé up there with you for 2 years.
We're talking today with Matthew Radcliffe, who's the author of a book that's coming out soon called Kampong Australia, which documents the experiences of Australian Air Force personnel at Butterworth Base in Malaysia from 1955 to 1988. Matthew, it's so interesting because so many people are calling in to talk about their stories, and we'll come back to that in a minute, but it's just something that I didn't know very much about.
Yeah, it is an interesting one. I think it falls in between a lot of gaps, this sort of deployment. If you go to the War Memorial, you won't find a lot about Australians in Malaysia and Singapore because, you know, they were never involved in these massive confrontations or things. So the War Memorial tends to not really worry about it. Other historians tend to think, well, it's military stuff, I won't worry about it. So it's sort of in this gap of this social and cultural history, but it's just military people.
Peter joins us. Hello, Peter.
I was in the National Service, first intake in 1965, subsequently posted to Butterworth, spent 12 months there from, I think, about May, June 66 through to about May 67. We had an absolute ball there. It was a bit of a dream posting, actually. It was a lot of first... intake National Service people actually ended up in Vietnam, and we were fortunate enough to go to Malaysia as a single guy. We really enjoyed it. Reckon it was fantastic, better than being in the army in Australia or Vietnam particularly. We lived on the RAF base, had RAF conditions, which were far, meals and everything, were far superior to what the army normally had, so it was actually a dream come true to get there.
It was interesting because I was wondering about Vietnam, Peter, because it's around the time of Vietnam in the 60s, and what relationship that the base would have had to Vietnam.
Well, effectively, as I remember, there wasn't supposed to be any traffic through Butterworth from Vietnam, but I know the badly injured or even the deceased out of Vietnam used to come back through Butterworth. I don't think that was widely publicised or widely known.
Okay. I might talk to Matthew about it. Matthew, because the Vietnam War is in that period of time, what was Butterworth to the Vietnam War?
Well, it was important. I mean, a lot of, as Peter said, a lot of the planes ended up coming back through Butterworth, especially planes with wounded on, and they were looked after first at the RAF base hospital there and then came home from there. But it was a politically sensitive issue because on their independence, the Malaysians, or the Malayans at that stage, were really strong for this sort of third world neutralism. So they didn't want to become involved in these big alliances, and they certainly didn't want to become involved in Vietnam. So the Australian base up there had to always look like it wasn't involved in this stuff.
So for that reason, there wouldn't have been strikes actually taking place from Butterworth?
Oh, no. Now, it was too far away for that anyway.
Okay.
But even things like transport planes, there was a lot of political sensitivities about, you know, you can't use this base for that reason. And that happened for the whole 33 years.
So the Malaysian government still had a strong influence about, despite the fact it was an Australian base, about what actually goes on with the base?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from their point of view, the base was there to help protect Malaysia, which is what it was originally intended for. But then as the strategic situation changed, the Australians wanted to use the base for different reasons, and there was always that negotiation.
Bob, good morning.
Gee, it's a memory blast. My uncle, Tim Holt, was a sergeant in 3rd Battalion Royal Australian Regiment, and he was up there. My two cousins were born up there, and he'd fought in the Malayan campaign and was at Kapyong in Korea. But they had fond memories. And in 1979, I called into Penang, and I think they were stationed in Penang, just across the waterway from Butterworth. And I had to meet their armour, and I had to bring about 20 or 30 gifts. And when I met them in Georgetown, the lady was there with her extended family, and they had pictures of my cousins as little kids, and this lady had looked after them. And, they were very emotional to see it. And they looked at me, and all the relatives checked me out to see that I was related. And they passed a thing to say that, yes, I must have been a Holt because I looked like...
You know, Bob, it sounds like the relationship with the locals was really important to people.
I'm sure it was, and many years later, these people had pictures of my cousins. I was so surprised.
Yeah, Matthew?
As with any large community, there were always, you know, individuals finding their own way through these situations. So there was some good and there was some bad, but on the whole, I think it was pretty good, yeah.
Good morning, Mark.
Yes, I did two spots over there. I was born there in 75. That was Dad's first trip, and then we went back over there in 79 to 82. I was about 7 years old.
You're gone.
Had an absolute, what I remember of it all, Dad had an absolute ball. I think we all did, actually. We lived in Penang on both times, and I remember going over to work with Dad. We used to do the night shift, the duty crew, they used to call it, and go stay there with them for the weekend, and like, he'd walk on all the planes and, man, heaps of sport, big in the golf club. The golf club was massive over there in Butterworth. And in Penang, they had the Hostie. Hostie was a big meeting place. And the school, college school there as well. On the weekends, all the soccer and all the sports, it was huge.
Do you know what? I mean, there's a common theme here, Mark. Number one, everyone had a great time. Number two, there seemed to be a lot of births going on over there. And it doesn't seem like there was a lot of... they are serving there, Matthew, but people seem to want to go back a lot as well.
It was a great posting for people who you know, the wonderful thing about Butterworth for servicemen was that they get to keep their job and their identity and go to work every day, and then when they finish work, they clock off and they're in this balmy, beautiful weather. They can go down to Bodie and have a drink and look at the sun go down over the water, and they're kind of like on holiday. So
and play
it's
golf,
a great combination,
go swimming.
For the two of them.
Well, what did they do apart from go swimming and play golf?
Oh, there was lots of things. I mean, as a gentleman just said, then the Bodie, which was the boat club, was a huge part of most people's life up there. So the people got out in the water, they sort of involved themselves in local festivals. The food was a big thing. People often remember, you know, just exploring the local food scene and being amazed. I mean, in the early 1960s, I've had people talk to me who said, you know, I went up there, I'd never even had a curry before. I mean, we can't imagine that now, but back then it was all new.
Steve, good morning.
Well, I was a chaplain in Butterworth, and probably the most interesting time of my life.
Why is that?
Oh, well, lots of things happened. I was officer in charge of Aussie Rules, which the army people who came, we organised a footy match, three games, and we played for a trophy that we had produced. Had a lot of fun with Aussie Rules. I was 45 at the time, so I was no chicken. But we had a lot of fun with that. I was in the Rotary Club.
Yeah.
Two officers in the Malaysian Rotary Club.
Oh, so there was a Rotary Club there as well.
Oh, in Penang, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it was mostly locals, but two officers were members, were appointed by the officer commanding.
How long were you there for, Steve?
Just 2 years.
Yep.
Wonderful years, and I had five children, so...
Would you have gone back and done another?
No, I would have gone back if I'd been asked, but I wasn't. We never had the opportunity to go back again.
Yeah.
Only one person ever did that, and he must have had a privileged position to do that.
Steve, look, thank you. I just want to go back to Matthew. Matthew, well, so far we've got rotary groups, we've got golf, But what did the servicemen do? What was it that they had to do for their posting for work?
I think you could consider it a normal peacetime posting as you would in Australia now. I mean, they still had their operations and their training schedule and their normal flying. So it was a normal operating Australian base. So a lot of the servicemen were involved in maintenance or the pilots in flying or to support people, and that was no different to any other base.
Gwen, good morning.
I visited Penang in the probably mid to late 1960s. My brother-in-law was not an army man, or an Air Force man. He was attached, a civilian attached to the Air Force, and looking after the electrical business on Butterworth Air Base. And my sister and her husband lived on married quarters, and I stayed there for a month with them. I just got absolutely wonderful memories. I was only a young lass, my first visit out of Australia.
Yeah.
And the culture and the different, it was just fantastic.
Did people work there as well? So civilians could go and work on the base too?
Yeah, there weren't a lot. There was a few public service positions. I mean, I suppose the biggest group of civilians would have been teachers at the RAF school. At one stage, I think there was about 50 teachers, and they were drawn from New South Wales and Victoria, and there would have been catering to about 1,000 students in the mid-1970s, but there'd be about 50 school teachers up there.
Well, the number of births there were, they would have had to have a large maternity hospital.
Well, they used the British one until the British left, and then they did have their own maternity wing on Four Rath Hospital in, I think, about 1965 or something it started. But I was born up there, and I know in 1973 there were about 120 Australian kids up there, and that would have been a consistent for, you know, most of the time.
There was an infantry rifle company there as local area defence and quick reaction force right through the 70s, 80s and 90s. It was a three-month tour called the Rifle Company Butterworth, says Sarge. So all sorts of things operating out of there as well. Graham, good morning.
Mate, I'm ex-Navy. We were there in 65 during the Indonesia-Malaysia confrontation. Two quick stories. We'd been on patrol for 7 weeks and we called in. And we visited Butterworth, and we were looking wrong time of the year for footy, and the buggers challenged us to a water polo match at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which was great, except they fed us at lunchtime and took us down to the wet canteen. I think they thrashed us about 300-0.
Yeah,
but we left our stomachs in their pool, I can assure you. And 2 days later, we took some dignitaries from Penang, Malaysia, and the RAF base out to show them a demonstration of the strength of the mighty HMAS Ibis, which was a minesweeper. So another guy and I had to go ashore, set up this target, which it was about 6 foot by 4 foot, go into a dugout. Anyway, the ibis sat off about 300 metres and blasted hell, brand guns, bloody 303s, and our main armour was only a bofa. At any rate, after about 15 minutes of fire, we got the all clear, so we've gone over, got the target. Was not a single mark on it. Not a single mark. So we punched a few holes in it, put it back on the boat and took it back to the ship and showed them just how good we were.
Thank you, Graham.
They looked after us pretty well.
Good on you. Thank you, Graham. Okay, hello, Jenny.
Yeah, Trevor, my husband was in the regular army and he was wounded in Vietnam in 1965. And I think he spent time in Saigon Base Hospital. And then he was transferred across to Butterworth Base Hospital. He was only there for a short time until he was flown back to Sydney, back to the Ryde Repatriation Hospital. So that's really all I know about it. I know he just spent a short time there and he was certainly very well cared for, I know that.
Yeah, which is what Matthew was saying earlier, that it was almost a transfer base.
Yeah, that's right. So
good on you. Thank you, Jenny.
Okay, thanks, Trevor. Bye.
Terry, good morning.
Yeah, no, I was up there from 82 to 84, and we're based on Penang, and I had four kids, and they were based, they went to the School of Penang, it was called, on Penang Island, and my daughter, eldest daughter, she was the first Girl Scout. They're only known as Girl Guides here in Australia, and at that time, and she was sanctioned the first Girl Scout in Malaysia, and we had scouting up there, and you know, the women used to play basketball, netball, all those sorts of things, just the same things that we used to do back here.
Yeah.
But it was, a great time. It was. I was a photographer in the Air Force, and, I would like to have stayed there, but unfortunately they only gave you a 2 or a 3 year posting. And
Well, it sounds like there was a queue of people wanting to go there.
Oh, yeah, no, it was a good time. As was said before, it was a job, but yet, when your job was finished at the base, you went home and it was like being on holidays. It was magic, and you had access to go on holidays all around the area. Like you got Thailand and stuff like that. We always used to go away.
So did you have a choice? Did you have a choice of either going back to Australia or going somewhere else?
No, we just went on a posting cycle.
Yeah.
And just went that 2 years. You had an actual 2 year posting, and they would extend to 3 years if they needed you in that position. But unfortunately, with me and most of us, you'll find that they were given 2 year posting, and then you were cycled back to Australia to a different base.
Okay, look, Terry, thank you, Matthew. It sounds like people didn't want to go home.
No, they didn't. I heard him talk about the junior sport, and there's a few interesting points on that one too. In the mid-1960s, there were a few Australians who were quite good at athletics and swimming, and especially at the school level. And, of course, the school used to enter itself increasingly in the local competitions for sport and athletics. And you actually have every now and then a young Australian who was like the Malaysian national champion for 100 metres or a swimming champion. So they integrated in sport really, really well, much better than some other areas. So the sport is an interesting factor.
When you take a look at when you were doing the research, Matthew, from the calls that we've had on the program this morning, I'd presume once you started looking, you didn't have that much trouble in getting information.
Yeah, I started a lot of this at the National Archives, and because they're defence files, if a car hit a local bus or something like that, there'd be a file on it, and quite often they've been saved. So the archives were full of information. But I did a 10-page questionnaire and I advertised it, and I got hundreds and hundreds of people eventually filled it in, and the information through that was really amazing.
So what is it that you were wanting to achieve with the book?
Well, I think what you said right at the beginning is that it just sort of shines a light on something that is really important to a lot of people, but it really isn't known about, and people haven't studied it and looked at the significance for Australian relations with Asia in general, or just the experience of people.
I've got to tell you, Matthew, if nothing else, you're going to sell copies to all of the people that went there because they're going to love remembering it.
I hope so.
Because it's from, as I said, from what we've seen, everyone's got a story to tell. And it's also an interesting part of Australian history that perhaps we need to know a little bit more about.
Yeah, I think you're right. Absolutely.
It's been a pleasure talking to you this morning, Matthew. Thank you.
No worries. Thanks, Derek.
Matthew Radcliffe, who's the author of a book that's coming out soon called Kampong Australia, which documents the experience of which we've heard many stories of the Australian Air Force personnel at Butterworth Base in Malaysia from 1955 to 1988.